It's such a familiar parable. It may be the most well-known of all of Jesus' parables. This parable of, as we call it, the prodigal son. But there's always a problem with things that are so familiar to us. And that is that we sometimes forget aspects of them, or we make assumptions about them over time that aren't entirely true. Let me give a brief recap of this parable. There was a man who had two sons. Now, the younger son is obviously a little restless, as I don't know, maybe younger sons tend to be. And he says to his father, "Give me my share of my inheritance." Now, this is interesting for a couple of reasons. As you may know, particularly from the Old Testament, in the Mideast culture of this time and for many, many centuries, it is the eldest son who gets the inheritance, who gets the property. But of course, Scripture is full of younger brothers who keep overturning this, and God keeps overturning our human cultural assumptions. You may think primarily of Jacob and Esau, or maybe Joseph and all of his older brothers. And in this case, the younger son wants a share of the estate. And the father gives it, divides it, the implication is, equally among the older and the younger son. But what's also fascinating is what the younger son is really saying to his father. He's saying, "I don't want to wait until you're dead to inherit my share." He's essentially insulting his father. I mean, this is a rather rude thing to do. "I can't wait till you're dead, old man. Give me my money now." And the father does. And the young son, probably no surprise here, maybe only the father was surprised by this. The young son takes his money and goes off. "I'm out of here. I'm out of this podunk, nothing, stifling place." And the younger son goes to New York City, or, you know, wherever, the big city, or to another country, as far away as he can get from his old man. And he squanders all the money in, this translation says, wild living. Other translations say dissolute living. The Bible does not give us details. You can fill in the details. What do you suppose a young man in the big city with money might do? You know, he buys a Maserati and some new clothes and a swanky apartment and probably buys lots of rounds of drinks for his friends. And some of those friends might be of the opposite sex. And I'll let you, you know, take it from there. Wild living, dissolute living. I think the implication is he did not invest this money. He did not give it to charity. Squanders it. And soon, we're not told how soon, we don't know how much time goes by, but soon it's gone. And there's a famine, and the young man finds himself penniless and hungry. And he goes to work for a local farmer in the country. He says, "I'll even take care of your pigs for you." Remember, this is a Jewish culture. Pigs are unclean animals. The young man says, "I'll even take care of your pigs." And he's so destitute, he envies the pigs, the slops, the garbage that they're being fed, the pods. That's how hungry and desperate he is. And as often happens when you reach a low point, this young man suddenly has an epiphany. He, as Scripture says, comes to his senses, or other translations say, he comes to himself. He has one of those aha moments, and he says to himself, "I have been such a fool. Even my father's hired hands live better than I do. How could I be so stupid? I need to go back to my father. I'm not worthy to be his son, but maybe, maybe, maybe he will hire me, and I will at least have food to eat. It's a humbling moment for this young man. But also, it takes a fair amount of courage to say, I'm going to go home after what I've done to my father. But I have nowhere else to go. So he starts home. Meanwhile, the father has been keeping watch and waiting. From the moment the son left, the father has been watching and waiting. We know this because the story says he saw his son when he was still way off. He's been looking every day down that road, and there his son is. And he goes running to him. Doesn't even wait for his son to get to the house. He goes running out to him. He's so overjoyed. And the son, you know, has prepared the little speech. Father, and I think it's heartfelt, but he's prepared it, as you might imagine, on that walk. Father, I'm so sorry. I'm not worthy to be your son. I've sinned before heaven and before you. Treat me like one of your hired hands. And before the son can even get that speech completed, some of the earliest manuscripts of the story cut off the son's words right in the middle. The father is already throwing his arms around him and saying, bring a robe, the best robe. Bring rings and sandals and that calf that we've been fattening up for a special occasion. This is it. We're having a feast. My son is home and alive and found. It's a wonderful moment, a wonderful story. And a writer named Rodney Clapp says this about this parable. He says, it is about God and God's life-giving love and mercy. Every time God's active, stretching, searching, healing love finds someone and calls that person back home, it does not mean there is less for the rest of us. It means there is more, more wine, more feasting, more music, more dancing. It means another and now a bigger party. That might also be a good definition of heaven. But notice, Rodney Clapp says, it doesn't mean there is less for the rest of us. The story doesn't end with this wonderful celebration. There's a twist. If it had ended there, it would be a great story. It would be a happy story. But meanwhile, remember that older brother? You know, the good one? You can imagine how the neighbors have been gossiping all these years. Oh, that younger son, he's a good for nothing. But that older son, good, upstanding boy. The older son, been out in the field, comes in, hears music and dancing and laughter. And he smells the aroma of food that's not the usual weeknight dinner he's used to. And he grabs one of the servants who's running by, probably to fetch some more wine or some more food. And he grabs him and says, what's going on? And the servant says, your brother's back. We're having a feast. And the older brother says, great, I'm so glad he's home. I'll go in and join them. Oh, wait, no. As good, upstanding people are often want to do, including me, the older brother's first reaction is, how dare he! A party for my brother, that good for nothing? A party? How dare my father do that? How unfair! Immigrants coming to this country getting driver's licenses and getting fed? Welfare recipients taking my tax dollars? How unfair is this? And he gets angry and he says, I'm not going into that party. The hell with it. and to hell with my old man. I'm out of here. The father hears of this. He may have heard the son screaming outside. He comes out, and again, notice the father runs to the son, as God so often runs to us, even when we're behaving like three-year-olds. Not to offend any three-year-olds by that comment. The father comes out and says, come in. What are you doing out here? Join the party. And again, the older son says, how dare you? I have slaved for you my entire life. And this, notice he doesn't even call him his brother. This son of yours comes home and you throw him a party and you've never even given me a goat to eat. How unfair. How dare you? And the father says, son, I'm so proud that you stayed. I'm so happy we've had this time together. Everything I have is already yours. But your brother, notice the change of phrase. The brother says, this son of yours. The father says, your brother has come back. He was dead and now he's alive. And the story ends. What happens next? Does the older brother come to his senses and come in? Or not? The parable is a familiar one. We make a lot of assumptions about it. Just the name. The parable of the prodigal son. I'll admit, for most of my life, until I got to seminary, I just assumed the word prodigal means wicked. But a little quick quiz. Test your vocabulary for words we never use on a daily basis. Anyone know, what does the word prodigal mean?
Lost?
Loss is a good answer. It does not mean loss, but that's a good answer. You're getting close. It means swan, and what were you going to say?
Left and came back.
What's that?
Went away and came back.
Another good guess. It's also not what it means. It means wasteful. Prodigal means wasteful. Okay. So, the younger son is the prodigal son, clearly. Right? Or not? The younger son went away, squandered all this wealth, but in doing so, realized the priceless gift of his father's love. It's sort of like a MasterCard commercial, squandering all your money, fancy cars, women, discovering how much your father loves you, priceless. The younger son learns something and comes home. He had to leave home and squander all of his money to learn an invaluable, priceless lesson. How much he is loved and how valuable that love is. He didn't waste anything, except maybe a few years. The older son, who stayed there the whole time, still hasn't realized that lesson. He's done all the right things on the surface, but all through those years, that bitterness and anger and envy are festering away. And he still doesn't understand how much his father loves him or how valuable that is. He's caught up in the fact that he didn't get his favorite food once in a while. The older son has been living with his father right there all of his life, and he still has no clue who his father is or how much he is loved. Prodigal means wasteful. Which of the two sons is truly wasteful? And Which one are we?